Rock out is Stone Cold. The Hellraiser is back.
Here we go. Evolution of the Shield.
John Cena versus the Showstopper.
Hulk Hogan and The Rock in the same ring.
You will never take my place at the head of the table.
Undertaker with a Hellscape submission. Oh, my God. What?
My God, Michaels just kicked Cena's head off.
The Monday Night Wars have come to WrestleMania.
It'll be The Rock. It'll be Austin one-on-one.
Third and fourth, the Undertaker.
Do you believe in miracles?
The streak is over.
Hey, guys, what's going on? And welcome back to Rivalries on the WWE Podcast on this August 14th. On a Saturday, as it seems like this is becoming more regular, is me coming on here on Saturdays, which is okay, but I'm going to try and get back to Fridays. Just hectic schedule lately, and with What If dropping on Fridays, it hasn't been the end of the world to give you guys this show on Saturday morning. But nevertheless, we are back here to talk about a rivalry that I think we never got to see to the fullest extent, in large part because we had one of these guys walk away for almost the entirety of the PG era, and that is Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, that started in 2012 and spanned all the way into August of 2014. And before we jump into it today, I have something I gotta get off my chest here, and it's to do with the regular product, and I know that's not why you guys are here, so I'm gonna make it quick. It's Drew McIntyre, and as you guys know, when he first started getting pushed as a main event babyface, I really liked him. I came on here and said he was the best babyface world champion since AJ Styles in 2017, 2018. I claimed that he was arguably the best world champion babyface since John Cena back in 2017. That was the last time that Cena held the world championship, albeit just for a cup of coffee. I think it was 2 weeks that he held the WWE championship the last time. And, you know, over the course of the last 12 months, I would say, Drew McIntyre's character, through no fault of his own, has just really gone down this unfortunate rabbit hole of cartoonish. And I gotta talk about the sword here. This whole angle they're doing with Jinder Mahal, that is in large part surrounded around the sword of Drew McIntyre. Like, I've always said and maintain that when a program or a storyline or a character becomes unrealistic, it's when I tune out. And unfortunately, I don't know about you guys, I cannot find a scenario in which one guy is wielding around a medieval sword and threatening to slice his opponent and or opponents in half with it realistic. And that's where we're kind of at with Drew McIntyre, in the sense that he has become just the over-the-top cartoonish character that I can no longer believe in. And that's saying something, because I love Drew McIntyre. I think he's arguably the best worker, at least in the main event scene right now. I think that they have something incredible with Drew McIntyre. He's one of the few bright spots on Monday Night Raw each and every week. But this whole sword thing, you know, the whole, I guess, dive into the Braveheart character is where I really started to sour a bit. And they've kind of saved it a bit. Like, they didn't stick with the face paint, thank God, that he wore during his I believe it was his one-on-one match against Roman Reigns at Survivor Series. They came out with the face paint. But the sword thing, I don't know. I cannot take it. And I remember I saw it on Twitter. I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about the Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre rivalry, and they said it would be a lot better if it wasn't about swords and motorcycles and more based on their actual past. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. There's no reason to make this rivalry about a sword or Jinder Mahal's motorcycle when you have a lot of real evidence to draw off of between the two over their past. But anyway, that's all. I'm not going to go too down deep a rabbit hole here on Drew McIntyre's sword. I just had to get that off my chest. But we're going to get into Lesnar versus John Cena. And here's the thing, is that we probably would have seen this in a much bigger capacity had Brock Lesnar stuck around for the last half of the Ruthless Aggression era and into the PG era. But unfortunately, Brock Lesnar walked away following WrestleMania 20 in March of 2004. And subsequently, John Cena became the breakout star over the course of the following 8 years and became arguably one of the biggest stars the company has ever seen. And I think no star has become bigger than John Cena or even gotten to his level since then. You know, it has often been said that John Cena is the last superstar to go past the WWE business, to supersede sports entertainment, become bigger than the company as a whole. And that's what John Cena has become here over the last 5 or 6 years. But in 2012, Cena was kind of taking a backseat in terms of the WWE championship scene. You know, it had been almost a year now that CM Punk, or not almost a year, about 8 months, that CM Punk had really just taken the WWE by storm and become the undisputed WWE champion, defeating John Cena, I believe it was SummerSlam in 2011. And he was just so over. Excuse me. He was just so over in WWE. And that caused John Cena to take a step back, for lack of better words, and he really went into a deep dive program with The Rock that led to the WrestleMania 28 Once in a Lifetime. Ironic title, isn't it? Given that they fought in the same match a year following that. That main event at WrestleMania 28. A match of which The Rock won. So John Cena now is, you know, suffering arguably the biggest loss of his career. He hasn't held the WWE Championship, which feels like the longest in his WWE career. And this leads to the following night on Monday Night Raw, where John Cena is in the ring asking for The Rock to come out. But lo and behold, it's not The Rock who comes out, but someone arguably even bigger. So Brock comes back the night directly following WrestleMania 28, and F5's the biggest star in the company. And this was a huge return for Brock Lesnar to WWE. Because at this point, like, obviously you had The Rock, but he was still on a very part-time basis. And other than John Cena, who was your big superstar? You know, HBK had retired. Triple H was almost entirely in a part-time management type of role. Undertaker was part-time. Batista was gone. Randy Orton was really suffering at this point in his career in terms of not being relevant any which way. And, you know, this was a guy that the WWE really needed, because other than Cena and CM Punk, and I guess Daniel Bryan, but even Daniel Bryan wasn't even close to what he would ultimately become 2 years from this time, they were missing star power. Like, Sheamus kind of, you know, teetered on that brink, but still not to this extent. So being able to bring in a guy like Brock Lesnar was just so crucial for WWE. And, you know, think about what he did when he was gone and, you know, becoming one of the biggest UFC stars of the later 2000s, one of the more dominant heavyweights. It, you know, I'm not a big UFC guy, so I'm sure there's some of you that could speak to this much better than I can. But I believe that he put the, you know, the microscope on that division, because before Brock Lesnar had showed up and had his, you know, great rivalry with Muir and Overeem and whatnot, that entire heavyweight division was not really focused upon in the UFC. So being able to bring Brock Lesnar back to WWE was just such a massive W for Vince McMahon, because not only are you bringing a former established star in your business, you're bringing in a guy who's an established star in real MMA. And then you start to get these people who, you know, kind of like me, for instance, who start thinking like, oh, is it going to be real now? The lines start to get blurred between reality and TV. And that's the best part, right? At least in my opinion, in WWE, is when the lines truly start to get blurred between reality and fiction. And that's what Brock Lesnar's character has always been about, at least in my opinion, since his return to the company in 2012. So this leads to a match between the two at Extreme Rules 2012, just less than a month after this incident. And one of the more name value matches of this time, especially when The Rock was not a part of a show. And, you know, a very weird match, a good match, but a match that Brock Lesnar largely dominated, but had a very unsuspecting outcome.
He's got that chain in his hand. Lesnar is like a Superman. And again, back to the point where he walks and talks and stalks Cena.
Can't believe he's going to try it one more time. He's going to go to the well. He's going to go to the well. Just one more time.
John Cena. Look at Cena. Watch Cena. Right hand. Cena with a chain to the skull. John Cena hit him in the head with the chain. And Cena is starting to feel it. Here comes Cena. Listen to this place. Thunder is in Chicago.
So we all even now, baby.
John Cena. Oh, look at the determination on his face. Lesnar trying to pull himself back to his feet. I don't know how Lesnar can even get to his feet.
Look at Cena.
Oh, Lesnar. No.
So So John Cena wins the match after being dominated for the vast majority of it. And I found this a very weird booking decision. And it's a testament to how strongly they booked Brock Lesnar in the following two and a half years that not a lot of people talk about the fact that he lost his first match back in WWE. And, you know, maybe pitting him against John Cena right out of the gate was kind of backing themselves into a corner in terms of booking, because you have a guy in John Cena who's just coming off of arguably the biggest defeat of his career against The Rock and has not held the WWE Championship for, I believe, the longest stretch since he first won it 7 years prior, kind of taking a backseat. So you can't really have John Cena lose yet another big match, right? Because, you know, he lost the big match against CM Punk at SummerSlam, didn't win the Royal Rumble, loses the big match to The Rock at WrestleMania. So I can understand that for a guy who, in a lot of ways, is still the biggest star in the company, you don't want to make him suffer yet another big match loss. But on the other hand, you have Brock Lesnar, who is brought in, first match in 8 years, and you have a chance to solidify him as this monster, this beast, this real-life real-life ass kicker, and a guy who has legitimate MMA experience and grounds to stand on, and you make him lose? Like, and I guess they kind of tried to save it being in an Extreme Rules match and Cena winning with a punch to the head with the steel change and then the AA on the steel steps to kind of protect Lesnar, that you can maybe sway that, well, you know, he was used to the traditional cage fighting. He wasn't used to an Extreme Rules match. Nevertheless, Lesnar loses. And, you know, these two don't see each other for about 2.5 years, which is saying something. And, you know, you have Brock go on a year-long program against Triple H that sees him win two out of those three matches. He wins the one against SummerSlam, he loses at WrestleMania, and then he wins, I believe it was at Extreme Rules, in a cage match that really puts a bow on that rivalry. And then he has a program with CM Punk that lasts the duration of 2013 that takes him into the Royal Rumble season, where he has a program with the Big Show as well, handedly beats the Big Show. And then it leads us to WrestleMania 30, and we all know what happens there. He ends the streak of The Undertaker. So what they essentially did here to make up for the loss of Brock Lesnar in his first match back in the company is make him go on a two and a half year run where he loses just one match. He gets pinned one time, and that is against Triple H at WrestleMania 29. And lo and behold, guess what? It's another no-holds-barred match. So they're kind of pushing this whole theme here that unless he's in a street fight where no rules are applied, he's always winning. And he's only lost two times in his 2 years back in the company. And then the kind of final cherry on top of this thing is him defeating The Undertaker and ending the streak and becoming the one in, I guess it was 21 and one back then. And then you look at what John Cena's doing. And over the course of 2012, they pushed this whole theme that 2012 was the worst year of his career. He hasn't held the championship now, let's say going into 2013, in a year and a half. And, you know, he has to get back on the saddle and he really has to reclimb the mountain and get back to where he was. Lo and behold, he wins the WWE Championship. And then he goes on to WrestleMania 29 to defeat The Rock and regain the WWE Championship. And sorry, no, he won the Royal Rumble and then went on to beat The Rock to regain the WWE Championship for the first time in a year and a half. And then 2013, he holds the championship all the way to SummerSlam, drops it to Daniel Bryan, and then he gets into a program with Bray Wyatt that leads into WrestleMania season. He defeats Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30, And then in the summer of 2014, when Daniel Bryan is forced to relinquish the WWE World Championship again, this was the first time because of injury, John Cena once again becomes the WWE World Champion. And, well, at this point, it was the Undisputed World Championship because they had unified the championships, one of which John Cena had held. So we'll backpedal a bit here. In 2013, after John Cena dropped the WWE Championship to Daniel Bryan, as we know, directly following that, Randy Orton cashes in the WWE Championship and aligns with the Authority. And then I believe it was November, John Cena wins the World Heavyweight Championship away from Alberto Del Rio. And then there's the failed cash-in from Damian Sandow. And at this point, the brand split is long gone. So it leads to the unification match between John Cena and Randy Orton at TLC in 2013, where both championships are held above the ring, a match that Randy Orton ultimately wins. So when John Cena regains the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, the Undisputed title, in the summer of 2014, you could make the case that he had held the title just 6 months prior when he was the World Heavyweight Champion. But in a lot of ways, it had been a full year since he was the actual champion, because I've said it numerous times, when there is no brand splits and both championships are floating between both shows, the WWE Championship ultimately takes over whatever the other world title is. Nowadays, it's the Universal. Back then, pardon me, it was the World Heavyweight. So John Cena, heading into SummerSlam of 2014, is faced with a familiar foe in Brock Lesnar. But now this is not Brock Lesnar coming back for the first time in 8 years. This is not Brock Lesnar coming back with no true motive. This is a Brock Lesnar now again flanked by Paul Heyman with 2.5 years under his belt back in the company with arguably the biggest claim to fame one could have, ending the Undertaker streak. And when it is revealed that it truly will be Brock Lesnar versus John Cena, it is clear that this is a big-time threat for John Cena's WWE Championship.
Lesnar believes that this is his house and you belong to him. That is not what this stands for. And any idiot with a pea brain would know that this house has, does, and always will belong to you. This is your house. But for the sake of gamesmanship, I'll play along with Brock tonight. Hey, Brock, if this is your house, then there's a stranger standing in your living room. Brock, there is a stranger in your house right now. Try to come down here and kick me out. Come on! Come on, you talk the talk! I'm standing right in your living room. I'm in your house. You come down here right now and you try to kick me out. No, Brock. No, Brock. We must have interrupted dinner. Or maybe he came down with diverticulitis or hepatitis or laryngitis or maybe a huge case of punk bitchitis.
So John Cena, awesome as always on the mic, but you know, you never really saw John Cena like this. And like the last time we had seen him this serious in my mind was during his program versus The Rock. So seeing him this fired up for Brock Lesnar was indicative of just how important this match was. So we get all the way to SummerSlam, and you're expecting just like this barn burner match, right? This match of just crazy, you know, like a long match, just Clash of the Titans here, and it's going to be one of the best matches of all time. Because I know a lot of people think, or maybe not the best match of all time, but one of the best matches of the year at least. But, you know, everyone kind of likes to crap on Brock, but he is an extremely good worker. Same thing with John Cena. When these guys want to go, they can go. But when we finally get to it and we see what happens in this match, it is not only a shocker, but more so than that, it is the birth of Suplex City. And we see John Cena just get absolutely ragdolled by Brock Lesnar with an outcome that shocked the WWE landscape.
Brock Lesnar, look at Lesnar. Oh my God. Lesnar reversing, countering out, now hammering away at Cena again. What a specimen. Oh my God, with Cena on top. Brock Lesnar going for an F5 to Cena. For the championship, Lesnar with the cover. Lesnar has won the WWE World Title in convincing fashion. And new WWE World Heavyweight Champion, Brock Lesnar.
That is the most dominating performance I have ever seen in a championship match in my life. It wasn't even close. My God. Lesnar has conquered John Cena. Lesnar destroyed a 15-time world champion. He destroyed the streak. This man, Brock Lesnar, is unstoppable.
And the commentary says it all, right? You know, I wasn't going to play you for, what was it, the 16 times he German suplexed John Cena. But for all intents and purposes, this was a squash. He squashed the biggest star of WWE's last generation in the main event of arguably the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. He destroyed John Cena. And this was long-term booking, right? Because they built towards this for 2.5 years to cement Brock Lesnar as the biggest star in the company. Maybe they knew that John Cena was on his way out. Maybe they just needed a big monster heel. Maybe they thought they'd squeezed all the juice out of John Cena that they had left. Obviously not the case right now with the summer of Cena, you know, 7 years later. But the fact of the matter is that this was the coronation, in my opinion, of Brock Lesnar as the new marquee star in the company. And can you blame them? I mean, the guy is an animal. Every match that he is in draws a casual fan. Every person I know who isn't a WWE go-hard, let's say like myself and everyone listening to this, will go out of their way to watch a match when Brock Lesnar is in it. And, you know, we saw John Cena and Brock Lesnar collide a few more times. You know, at the following pay-per-view, John Cena won by disqualification, resulting in Brock to keep the championship again. And then they were both involved in a triple threat match at the 2015 Royal Rumble, including Seth Rollins for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. But, you know, beyond that, these two never really reignited their rivalry. And I wonder if somewhere down the line we will see them collide, maybe at a WrestleMania, before both of them ultimately retire for good. And I mean, I guess Brock Lesnar has to show his face first after a year and a half hiatus at this point. But I mean, this rivalry was really a microcosm of what we should have gotten. Because I think we could say with all certainty that we would have gotten John Cena versus Brock Lesnar had Brock Lesnar stuck around in the mid to late 2000s. And another thing you have to ask yourself is John Cena even remotely as big as he is now if Brock Lesnar sticks around? I mean, who knows, right? Brock Lesnar was the clear-cut successor to guys like Rock and Steve Austin as the face of the company. But when Brock walked away in early 2004, WWE had to scramble for a new guy to lead them into the next generation. And, you know, John Cena, Randy Orton, and Batista all flirted with that, the possibility of taking on that role. But it ultimately became John Cena, and that was all but solidified by, I would say, early 2006, certainly by 2007. So, I mean, this was a rivalry that made sense on numerous levels. I think that in a lot of ways, it was some real life aspects thrown into it. Like Brock coming back and kind of being like, you know, this is my damn show. And all it took for me was choosing to coming back and pick up a phone to have Vince push me to the top of the mountain. No, obviously that is all just a theory. But, you know, there's so much storytelling that went into this rivalry because of both superstars and who they were and what they did for the company. But, I mean, Brock Lesnar went on for the following, my God, five and a half years of being arguably the biggest star in the company. While John Cena, I would say 2-3 years max following this match, really faded into a full-time part-timer. And I mean, this is the thing that I think that we never got to see this rivalry to the fullest of the extent. And in large part to Brock being away from the company in the early, in the mid to late 2000s. And then John Cena soon after Brock being pushed to the top of the mountain, going into more and more of a part-time reduced role. But nevertheless, we got it, and it was a pretty damn cool rivalry, and this is one of the more memorable SummerSlam main events of the last 10 years or so. But anyway, guys, that's all I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. As always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can get Matt on Twitter at Wrestling_audio. Or you can email him at RealWWEPodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, guys, I will talk to you next week.